From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark, here again with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, talking with you about what's new in healthy living, sharing some down-to-earth advice and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, the number to call is 800-462-7413. And, of course, along with your call, some topics to talk about, Zorba.
Yes, breakfast, the most important meal of the day. Now, Kellogg's put that in their cornflakes so people would eat it. But here's a study that showed that may be exactly the right thing to do. And sperm count. Who knew that sperm count was decreasing in Western men? But actually, this has been going on for years. What does it mean to fertility in our society?
Okay, and our recipe.
Yes, it's Mary's B-L-E-A-T salad. Got to be able to spell it. You don't have to be able to pronounce it, but it's a listener-sponsored recipe, I think, Tom.
Yeah, our listener will be with us.
Ooh, cool.
To the phones now, Zorba, 800-462-7413. 800-462-7413. Our first caller joins us from La Crosse, Wisconsin. Hi.
Thank you for taking my call. I am interested in any comments, Dr. Zorba, that you might have on essential oils, which are being marketed and sold as remedies or even cures for whatever ails you, often it seems in lieu of traditional proven medical treatment. And you may know they're sold usually in small bottles, and you're instructed to rub the oil on parts of your body or sniff the aroma. I'm frankly skeptical. Have there been any clinical trials to back up these claims? Do they have any medicinal value at all?
Well, skeptical is actually the way to be. You know, I love this in terms of marketing. Essential oils, you know? Essential, like your body needs these oils. I mean, whoever thought that up, and it wasn't one person, you know, thought, well, we need these essential oils. This is, my mother used to use oil of Olay.
Oh, yeah,
remember? Oil of Olay,
yeah,
to keep your skin fine and beautiful. And you know, when my mother was 70, she looked like she was 70. And when my Aunt Myrtle was 80 and she used Pond's Cold Cream all the time to keep her skin young and lively, she looked like a young 80-year-old. She did not look like a 40-year-old. So it's really interesting. And that's really what these are about. Now, what are they used for? Well, first of all, let's look at science and non-science. Well, science doesn't prove anything. I mean everything, rather. There are some things that are not studied, and we don't know much about them. And there, frankly, are lots of things in medicine where science hasn't helped us. Let's give an example. Chronic pain. We don't have good drugs for chronic pain. Opioids were the wrong way to go, and I, like most other doctors, were prescribing many more opioids than we should have been prescribing, and we don't know a good way to treat that. How about depression, where you don't want an antidepressant? How about fatigue, where you have fatigue? There are lots of different things in medicine that we don't have the answer for. So as far as essential oil, double-blind, placebo-controlled trials reproduced in an academic type environment, so you know they're doing anything, zip, squat, nothing. They don't exist. Now, whether or not they work, well, let's talk about the placebo effect.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's a powerful effect.
Yeah, the mind can make them work.
Yeah, the mind can make them. And it could be that the smell of the essential oil then triggers something in your mind, and that can make you work. So let me give you an example of me. Now, one day, I must have swore at my mother. I have no idea, but my mother never had a swear word at all. And you know what she did? She took a bar of Ivory soap. Now, I know you'll be shocked, but she put it in my mouth. When I say that, I can taste Ivory soap. Now, I have not actually tasted Ivory soap since I was 8 years old, right? But it triggers a memory. As soon as I talk about it, it's ivory soap. Cigarettes. I mean, I used to smoke cigarettes when I was in college, quit in 69. When I talk about it, I can smell the Marlboro and I can feel it on my finger. So in other words, there are different things that trigger memories within the brain. I think essential oils may do that. And for some people, they may work. Are you thinking of using them?
I am not. Mm-hmm. I have some acquaintances that are dealing with them and trying to sell them, and I've just been skeptical.
Trying to sell them. How much are they?
You know, I don't know. I can't.
Are they trying to sell them to you?
Yeah. Or anybody that will that will buy them. You know, they're just they have them, and you know, they say, oh, they're wonderful, and it's
right. And if they sell them to you, they probably get them at a discount, or they
probably
something like that. Sort of like the, you know, I mean, that's the marketing ploy of a lot of companies to that actually do that with cosmetics, Tupperware, you know, jewelry, a whole bunch of other things. But I don't think they're worth it. Now, how's your health?
Oh, I'm wonderful. I'm 69 years old, and I just had my annual medical checkup, and my doctor said, you're probably the healthiest guy I'm going to see all week.
Oh, well, you know something? I think you should start selling essential oils yourself, because obviously you're in the top of your class.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. I appreciate that, and I appreciate your comments on this, too. It kind of bears what I was thinking, too, that it might be just the suggestion that might cause you to, that, you know, evoke a memory or something.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
All right.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Take care.
Yeah,
we appreciate the call. Gee, my doctor has never told me that I was the healthiest person.
Maybe you're no longer at the top of your class. That's it. But getting back to these schemes, Shaklee was a perfect example where they would sell soap and cosmetics and vitamins and other things, and they would say, why don't you be part of our group? Because when you sell it, you then get a discount. In reality, it's really, the feds have said it's not a Ponzi scheme, but it's sort of Ponzi-like, and there are a variety of other things. Nutrisystems is another good example where people then become, you know, salespeople and not even realize it. But essential oils may work for some people. If it doesn't cost too much for you, try it if you want.
800-462-7413, our number, 800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, we talk about meals, breakfast, lunch, dinner.
Right. Very, very interesting. So what do you have for breakfast, Tom?
What do I have for breakfast? Orange juice.
Okay.
Instant coffee.
Instant coffee. If anything, it'll kill you. What brand? Is it a generic instant coffee?
I don't know, but it's dark, so it must be good.
I don't know, but it's dark. And you do the shopping, right?
I do, that's what I like. It's really quick. It's instant.
That's right. And it gets on with your busy day. Okay.
And I have cereal.
Okay, what kind of cereal?
Cereal, whatever I get at the store.
You go shopping, so what do you pick up?
I'm not tied to one cereal.
Okay, so different cereals.
Cereals. Mm-hmm. I have a bran muffin.
Excellent.
Yeah. Okay, so that's it.
But that's very good. That's actually a good breakfast. You know, you've got some caffeine that's going to get you going. You've got some fiber, which is really important. You've got a cereal with some carbohydrates to get you going. And you are doing better than about 30 to 40% of the American population doesn't eat very much. Mm-hmm. Now ask me what I have for breakfast.
What?
Coffee.
That's all?
Usually that's all I have. And
you
I mean,
have
I'm
to, have,
right
a,
way.
You have to have a good breakfast.
Well, I don't have. I'm not hungry around breakfast time. Sometimes I'll have a bagel, sometimes a bagel with lox. If I'm going to the office and it's Wednesday, I'll have a donut. Because I love donuts. And
but
I
only
limit
on
myself.
Wednesday.
Well, I limit myself to like Wednesday and Saturday or Sunday. Otherwise, I would have a donut every day, which I know is not the right thing to eat. But the Seventh-day Adventists are a big group. Now, the Seventh-day Adventists, if they're following their traditional diet, it is a vegetarian diet. And some of them have a vegetarian diet, but even if they don't have and I don't mean a vegan diet, I mean a vegetarian diet that includes milk products and eggs, animal products, but they don't eat animals. But a number of vegetarians, about half of them are not pure, rather Seventh-day Adventists, are not pure vegetarians. But they eat a proper type diet, and part of their religion is to eat breakfast in the morning. In other words, it's part of what they follow in terms of, in other words, morning breakfast, a prayer before breakfast, eating a morning breakfast gets their body going. Mm-hmm. And they've looked at Seventh-day Adventists, and they've been following their health for a number of years because their health is far better than the average health. Their BMI is less. They're not as heavy. And the question is it due to a lot of breakfast? And lo and behold, some other research has found that, indeed, breakfast may be an important thing. In other words, they have less diabetes, they have less carbohydrate intolerance, which is sort of pre-diabetes. They have better, less high blood pressure and less heart disease. And it may not just be their vegetarian diet, but it may actually be the breakfast that they have. So there are a number of other studies that have shown that people eat a better breakfast in the morning versus having a large meal in the evening. Large meal in the evening tend to be more diabetic, more glucose intolerance, heavier, and the question is why, and it may be because the morning breakfast means you're going to use it throughout the day, and your metabolism is going to be different. Yeah, yeah. And when you have a large meal at night, you sit down and watch TV. A lot of people do that, or they look at a screen. And I have lots of patients who do that. They tell me who are overweight, and what they'll say to me, well, I don't eat much for breakfast. Maybe I have a little something. And then I don't have much for lunch. I don't have enough time, but I have a big meal at dinner. And so a lot of people don't have breakfast, have hardly any lunch, so they're basically fasting until their evening meal. And then they eat an evening. Well, they eat, and then they eat again. And they eat throughout the night from 6 to 10. Many people get about 60 to 70% of their calories. And they sit there, and we make fat. And so I think the answer is to eat a breakfast. And your breakfast actually is a very good breakfast, except for one thing, Tom.
What's the one thing?
The coffee is not what I would expect.
But it's dark.
But it's dark, and it's instant, and it's quick.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener in Richmond, Illinois. Hi.
Hi. Well, I am calling about my friend who has been suffering with gout. About 6 weeks ago, he started with it in his foot. He went to podiatrist because he thought it was something else, and he diagnosed it as gout. He gave him Indocin. A couple of weeks later, it got better. But then he now has it in his finger, and he's been suffering with this for about 6 weeks. He went to another doctor. They gave him allopurinol.
Mm-hmm.
They started with 100 milligrams, and it didn't do any good. And then they went to 300 milligrams, and he's still suffering with it.
Mm-hmm.
He has stiff pain all over his body, and we're wondering what if there's anything else that we can do or if we're heading in the right direction with information his doctor's been giving us.
The answer is there's a lot that he can do. There's some stuff he can do right away that's going to help him. And I've done, for years, gout research because I tested new medications for gout. A drug called Ularic, full disclosure, this was produced by a company called Takeda, and it was a drug that is somewhat better than allopurinol in certain situations. But allopurinol is a generic drug that's really good and isn't expensive. But gout, you've got to look at it in various forms. So first of all, in the end, allopurinol at 300 milligrams a day has about an 80% to 90% chance it's going to keep him from getting gout in the future. He's got a flare now. We'll talk about that flare in a second. So he shouldn't stop using it. It's really good to use. And usually you start it about 2 weeks after the flare. And some people stop it. If there's still a flare, they'll wait until the flare subsides and then restart it. And the reason is allopurinol can make it worse, even though in the end it makes it better, because it mobilizes sort of the uric acid that's in your body and the stores. It kind of mobilizes it. It keeps your body from producing it. But in the end, sometimes the levels are higher. So since he's on the allopurinol, I would recommend this. He goes to a drugstore. He gets Aleve, generic Aleve, not the name brand. He takes two tablets twice a day. And he can do ibuprofen, but you have to take that three times a day. And what I do when I put people on allopurinol, you get flares for about the first 6 months that you take the allopurinol, is I have them take at least one Aleve tablet daily, even if they're not flaring, for 6 months after they start allopurinol. But if they get a flare, it's two tablets twice a day. And if that doesn't work for him, have him stop the allopurinol for a week or two to get things to settle down and have him restart it. The allopurinol will reduce uric acid in his body that he's overproducing. And in the end, it's a wonderful drug. It really keeps gout at bay. So do you know any famous people who had gout? I'm going to give you some names.
Do I know any? No, I don't.
No, just my
friend.
Well, he's famous. He's famous to you. Ben Franklin.
<right. laughs>
Ben Franklin had gout. Nothing he could do about it. He wrote about it. Louis XIV had gout. You know, it was thought to be due to rich food, which was true, but it was really due to a lot of liver. Both Ben Franklin and Louis XIV ate liver, and liver is actually seafood produced can increase uric acid, but it's really liver that does it. Now, I want to go one more thing. The gout diet is worthless. It will drop the uric acid. If you're really strict about it, and it's a very strict diet, you might get down 1 point from like 8 or 9 to maybe 1.7 or 8. But allopurinol will drop it far better, and it's a far better drug. So if he's on the gout diet, I don't recommend the gout diet unless he's a Nova Scotian fisherman who eats lobster every day. And you live in Illinois, so I know that is not the case because it would be too expensive.
That's right. Well, thank you very much. It was a pleasure to speak with you.
Yeah,
thanks so much for the call. We appreciate it. So I get this straight. So
yeah, get it, please.
A bad diet can have some causal effect on
It's very interesting with gout. People can walk around with a uric acid, it's from elevated uric acid, of 8.0 or 9 and never have gout, never. And other people walk around and they have gout. And we don't know why. We know there's a genetic predisposition. Trauma can be an issue. But diet, there's a purine-free diet to get rid of gout. No liver. I know you love liver, right? Do you like liver, by the way?
Not at all.
No, I love liver and onion. No lobster. I know you love lobster, right?
I like lobster.
Right? Yeah. How often do you eat it?
I've had the last time, I think, was about 5 years
ago. 5 years ago. No shrimp.
Yeah, shrimp.
Shrimp is much more common. And there are other things that you eat. And people get put on these very strict diets. They don't work. First of all, it's hard to follow the diet.
Yeah.
And second of all, they don't work nearly as well as the drug, allopurinol, that was invented probably in like 1962. It's cheap. It's a generic. It works. You take it every day. Keeps away flares. But for that first 6 months, you tend to flare more. So you got to take an anti-inflammatory. And there's another drug you take called colchicine if the leave does not work for him.
800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba. Before the break now, Zorba, let's check in again with your favorite backseat drivers, the Grammar Police. The following email came to us from a listener, Frank, who lives in the UK. He writes, "Greetings from the old country." Recently, I had need to contact the Grammar FBI about an international warrant with regard to these two crimes perpetrated on your program. One, in reply to something Tom asked, I think it was how much tofu is enough tofu, Zorba, you said, "We don't know. We have to quantitate that." Now, nobody loves an American word coinage more than me, but should this not be quantify? I've heard other American medics also say quantitate,
right.
So I suspect it may arise from some medical grammar ruination cabal. Then, in reference to smoking in films, you said an interesting factoid, by which you meant a little fact. Factoid means an unreliable piece of information.
Oh, I don't
presented
know.
As
oh,
fact.
I don't think
so
that.
I didn't say fake factoid. Our listener knows. So I think you may have been meaning just a little fact. Contrary to popular belief, we in the Grammar Police do have very full lives. However, I am developing carpal tunnel syndrome from gripping my pencil and pad so tightly to note these Zorba-isms through every show. Keep up the excellent and entertaining work.
Oh, you know those Brits. You know those Brits.
Have a little too much time on your hands? Join the Grammar Police by posting on our Facebook page or sending us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org or Facebook.
More of your calls coming up, as well as another interesting topic. And we'll be quack, quack, quacking up with Dr. Tu, all right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Recipe time again now, Zorba, and this week we're in for quite a treat. Today we have a special guest joining in on the fun. Mary Rollian joins us with her twist on the BLT sandwich. She's made it into a salad and added a few yummy ingredients for good measure. Mary, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Good to be on the show, Tom and Dr. Zorba.
Mm-hmm.
Hi.
Hi. Now, tell us about the BLEAT salad.
Okay. Well, I first was complimented by my mother-in-law for making salads.
Now, wait a minute. And, compliments from the mother-in-law count a lot.
Let me write that down.
Oh, yes. Yes.
We get lots of points for that. That's right. That's right.
Fortunate enough to have two wonderful mother-in-laws. Both have passed, but rest in peace. And my own mother, I have been extremely fortunate. So thanks for letting me get that in.
Of course.
Okay.
Of course.
How'd you come up with it? What motivated it?
Well, we now love avocado, and we like to add eggs into our diet. So a hard-boiled egg is usually in our refrigerator for a few days. And I decided to put that into the BLT salad and just incorporated avocado and hard-boiled egg. And everybody likes it. It's a little bit healthier. And there is, for people that are kind of cutting down on their carbs,
mm-hmm.
So less bread, then you don't have to do the toast.
I think you're right.
Add some croutons.
I want to get back to the avocado for a second. Okay, so how old are you now?
Oh, boy. Asking a woman her age?
Oh, boy.
I'm retired. I'm in my 60s.
You're retired. So how old were you when you had your first avocado?
50?
That's right. That's what's so interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, avocados are not a Wisconsin vegetable. You know, when
right.
I can still remember when I had avocados in college, it was like, oh, wow, that's really gourmet. That's like bon appetit.
I don't think I've ever had avocado, but I know I don't like it.
You have never had an avocado? Oh,
no,
my
Tom.
God, Tom, you are avocado deficient.
Well, when I get to be 50, maybe I'll.
Oh, boy.
There we go. Well, Tom is going to eat an avocado in his next lifetime. So this is Mary's BLEAT salad. So start out with 1/4 pound of bacon. So bacon, I cost compare. I will never get out of cost comparing. I can really afford any bacon in the refrigerator case. It's not going to bust me. This is not lobster. I always look at the price, and if there are two bacons and one is less than the other and they look about the same, I never go for the more expensive one. I don't. Tom is smiling. Why are you smiling? You're smiling.
You don't have to save your money on bacon.
No, but I do. I do. I can't necessarily buy the more expensive bacon. It just goes against my grain. Look at that. Okay, 2 romaine hearts, 1 hard-boiled egg sliced, 1 little container cherry tomatoes. So you mean a container of cherry tomatoes?
Well, I usually use like a half of a cup mm-hmm. to 1 mm-hmm. cup of cherry okay. tomatoes, grape, or mm-hmm. even a chopped Roma, mm-hmm. whatever you have uh-huh. or whatever you prefer.
Right. Half a cup of creamy French dressing. Do you go for the low-cal French dressing, regular French dressing? What do you use?
I don't buy low-cal anything. I found that when you use low fat or low calorie, they're usually adding sugar.
Right.
Yeah.
You see, we've got applause.
All right,
we've
Tom.
Got applause. And you know what? You are exactly correct. And you know what? I haven't heard you clap in a while. That's really good. That's right. And 1/4 cup of plain yogurt. Okay, so heat the oven at 350. Place 1/4 pound of bacon in strips to bake on a foil-covered cookie sheet or on one of those other sort of, we have a sheet when we bake it in the oven which has little holes in it. Bake it for 20 minutes until it's cooked to your liking. Dry on paper. Break it into pieces. So why do you make your bacon in the oven versus on the stove or in the microwave?
Well, I find that it's more even, mm-hmm. And it kind of just works better for us, but you could do it however you want.
But, you know, I think you're right. We have friends in Chicago, and when they come up, we always have a big breakfast when they come up, and we often have bacon, and they always do their bacon in the oven, and you know what? It tastes better. I'm not sure exactly why, but it tastes better than when I put it in the microwave, although I use the microwave for speed sometimes. Wash and dry the hearts of romaine lettuce. Break them into bite-sized pieces. Add them to two large bowls equally. Add the sliced hard-boiled egg, the sliced avocado, your medium avocado that's sliced, cherry tomatoes, a bit of salt and pepper. Top the salad with a mixture of some creamy French dressing that you like, and some yogurt, whisked and poured, and add a handful of croutons if you want to. But if you're going to buy croutons, make sure the croutons are not too fatty. And there really is a difference in croutons. Some are baked, and some are basically baked in oil, and that'll make a difference. Not a lot of calories in this. Wonderful, wonderful recipe. You've got lots of protein in here, and I love it. And I think that, you know, it's wonderful. It's a nice, simple, easy, wonderful recipe for this time of year.
Thank you. I love your show and the work that you do. And I hope your listeners enjoy the healthier alternative to the BLT sandwich.
Well, thank you. Thank you for sharing
that.
I really appreciate it. And, Tom, I know you're going to like this because you can finally taste avocado. I know it's been on your bucket list for years, and you can finally taste it, finally.
Promise me you'll try it, Tom.
Moving right along.
Moving right along.
We have to get back to the phones, yeah. Mary. Thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome. My pleasure.
Okay. 800-462-7413 is our number. Oh, and to get a copy of Mary's recipe.
Oh, that's right. If you want to get a copy, you cannot write us in the mail because we will not answer it because we are too lazy. But you can send us, go to our website at zorbapastor.org, or you can find us on Facebook.
Now back to the phones at 800-462-7413. 800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, a listener with us in El Paso, Texas. Hi.
Hello, Tom.
How can we help?
Well, I've got this issue going on with, they seem like hives or welts. And they're primarily on the top of my scalp, my cheekbones, my nose, the top of my shoulders, the clear spots behind my ears. They range from size of a large pimple to as big as a penny and quite swollen.
How long has it been going on?
About 2 years, Doctor.
2 years?
Let me ask, when you have them, how long do they last? Do they come and go quick?
They last for weeks, and they're kind of like they go through a cycle. They will come up, and they'll be very annoying and itchy, and then they will kind of drift away, get smaller and go away, and then a week later, 2 weeks later, they'll come back.
So you've gone to a doctor for this, never gone to a doctor for this at all?
Three dermatologists.
Okay, not one. Now, how did you find the different dermatologists? That's a lot of dermatologists.
My doctor suggested one. I went to see him. I didn't like him. He went to see her.
You didn't like him. What didn't you like about him?
Well, he kind of focused on my face and said there was looked like it was rosacea.
Rosacea. Uh-huh.
Rosacea. Mm-hmm. And so he gave me some creams. Kind of ignored. He gave creams for my face and my scalp. The rosacea went away, but the bumps didn't go away.
The bumps did not.
And he was pushing his own products and that kind of...
Pushing his own products, that's right. Take my Dr. John's special solution, and I promise you it will go away. Good reason to change. Okay, now let's go to dermatologist number two.
Okay.
Behind door number two. Tell me about number two.
She looked at it and kind of did the doctor scratch her head. I have no idea what this is.
Why do we scratch our heads when we don't know? I mean, it's because we itch.
And then she said it appears to be folliculitis.
Okay, folliculitis.
And but she wanted to do she put me on a one-month low-level antibiotic.
Okay.
That did nothing.
Okay, that didn't do anything at all.
So
when
she came back, she said, we're going to biopsy this.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so she did a biopsy.
Okay, and what did that show?
Well, it came back sort of indeterminate, but they're going to call it folliculitis.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then...
indeterminate means we don't really know what this is, so we're going to fall back to it might be this, but we're not going to verify it. So the biopsy didn't give the answers. So then you went behind door number three. Okay, tell me about...
And we went through the same procedure mm-hmm. with creams.
Mm-hmm.
About this time, I'm getting really tired of this.
Of course. Who wouldn't? We'd all be tired of it.
They can't give me a determinate answer, mm-hmm. and the creams aren't working.
Mm-hmm.
It gets to some points that it gets very itchy, irritated. Mm-hmm. So
sure.
I'm uh-huh. scratching my head.
Uh-huh.
It just nothing has seemed to make it go away.
Okay.
The last couple of days, I've been taking Benadryl.
Okay. How much Benadryl? How much Benadryl have you been taking?
Oh, gosh, that's over the counter.
Over the counter.
I've been taking one in the morning and one at night.
Okay. Does that make you sleepy, by the way?
No, it doesn't.
Okay. Because a lot of people are made sleepy, but some people
right.
are not. By the way, what has that done? Has that helped at all?
Seems to control the itching.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I want to talk a little bit about that. So from the itching point of view, we're going to make an assumption now. The assumption is I don't know what's going on. We're going to assume that. But let's treat it and see if we can get rid of it. Because sometimes in dermatology, there was an old saying, an old saw when I went to medical school. Dermatology, you never cure, you never kill, and they keep on coming back. That's what they used to say.
I was thinking this should be a joke. How many dermatologists does it take to get rid of hives?
Hives, that's pretty funny. That's right. That's very good.
I haven't got the answer yet, though.
Yeah. That's right. We don't have the answer. So the first thing I'd recommend is let's do a full-bore antihistamine type way of doing it. So first of all, if you tolerate Benadryl twice a day, then increase it more than that. See if you can tolerate it three times a day. Take 50 milligrams at bedtime, okay? So 25 in the morning. If you can tolerate 25 at noon, take it. If not, take Zyrtec, over-the-counter Zyrtec, okay, at noon, and take 50 milligrams at bedtime. Next thing I want you to take is over-the-counter Zantac. Because Zantac is an it's different. It's an H2 blocker. It blocks stomach acid, but it is an antihistamine. In other words, it is against histamine in a different part of our body, and sometimes that helps. Take 150 milligrams in the morning, up to 150 milligrams in the evening, okay? I want you to stay on that for 2 to 4 weeks and see what that does. If that doesn't work, then I think you should be on prednisone for 2 to 4 weeks.
Prednisone.
Right. I would recommend 5 to 10 milligrams, probably 10 milligrams for the first week, 5 milligrams a day for about 2 to 4 weeks after that. See if it'll settle down, stay on the antihistamines, and then go back to them. So for some people, these funky allergic responses, which we don't understand, that may be triggered by a virus or something you touched, something we'll never find because it's in your past. We just have to get the allergic response under control. And the quickest way to do it often is full-bore antihistamines, and then the heavy-duty drug is the prednisone. That's what I would do. You don't need another dermatologist. You don't need another biopsy. What you need is to just have treatment of this. That's what I would recommend. Prednisone, you got to get from your primary care doc. You might be able to talk them into it, or you might need a visit. But the antihistamine, I recommended, you can do by yourself.
That'd be great.
That's what I'd recommend. And
right.
Give me the name of your insurance company. We'll just send them another dermatology bill.
You got it, Dr.
Thanks so much for the call.
Let us know what happens, really.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. And before the break now, Zorba, we love it when our listeners chime in with helpful information.
Oh, I love it.
Or
love
interesting
it. Yes.
Ideas.
Always.
The following note came to us from Bruce in Madison, Wisconsin. He writes, Zorba, regarding a recent caller who couldn't use commercial antiperspirants, I've been using an old-time solution for several years, and it seems to work great. Milk of magnesia.
Oh.
Cheap, too.
Mm-hmm.
I just put a little on my fingers and spread it over my armpits every morning after drying off from my shower. Seems to stop odor and wetness just as well as the name brand antiperspirants. Maybe even better. And no perfumey scent.
I love it. Milk of magnesia. I wonder what that looks like. At the beach.
Well, it's in the armpits. So
it's in the armpits.
Keep your arms.
But he uses his fingers. What if you just kind of splash it around? You go, what's that white stuff coming from your pits?
Feel like adding something meaningful to our show? No sweat. Just post to our Facebook page or send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
More calls to come, as well as another interesting topic, right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. More of your calls coming up at 800-462-7413. But first, Zorba, this is interesting. The sperm count in Western men has decreased by 50%.
By 50%, yeah. And actually, this has been an ongoing debate that's going on within the medical community is whether, you know, what is the meaning for this? So first of all, remember, you only need one sperm to fertilize one egg. That's it.
Yeah.
But we also know that men who have more sperm are more fertile on the whole. But men who, once it drops below a certain point, then you begin to have infertility. And normal sperm counts are something like about 80 to 100 million sperm per milliliter. Remember, a milliliter is, you know, a really tiny amount of liquid. It's, you know, it's like a you know, very small amount, you know, of liquid that's actually there. But that's dropped down to about 50 million from basically almost 100 million to 50 million is a big drop. And the question is why? What does it mean to fertility? Is it due to diet? Is it due to toxins in the diet? Some people may think that it may be due to plastic that we're eating because so many things are in plastic. And the fact is we don't know. And we don't know whether or not this signals a drop in fertility in Western men. It doesn't occur in areas, for instance, which are not industrial. So you take certain parts of Africa, certain parts of Central America and South America, they appear to have the same sperm counts.
It's got to be something in the environment.
Seems like it must be something in the environment or something in the environment is issues, something in the diet, what we're eating. Maybe it's what we're wearing. We know that men that wear jockey shorts have lower sperm counts, but boxer shorts have been more common than jockey shorts. Maybe sitting in front of the computer, lack of exercise. We don't really know.
But were you saying earlier that it really shouldn't matter that much because there are plenty of them?
Well, it doesn't matter that much in that you only need one sperm with one egg. But we know that men who have low sperm counts, let me go back to a different way. Men who have infertility often are men who have low sperm counts. And so low sperm counts and infertility go hand in hand. And so although you need one, the question is this signaling a drop in fertility that ultimately is going to occur? We also know in industrialized societies, we have fewer children. So it's that's the hard part to measure because people often have one or two children versus in non-industrialized society where they may have 6 to 10 children.
Mm. So, there are enough people in this country
already. There are enough people in this country already, so we shouldn't be worried about it. Well, the real bottom line isn't that time. The bottom line is it may be exercise makes a difference. It may be there are things within the environment that makes a difference. This is one of the discomforting things because it may be something in the food supply, might be insecticides. We just don't know, but more research needs to be done on this because this could be potentially something that really is disastrous to our society.
800-462-7413, our number, 800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener in Tallahassee, Florida. Hi.
Hi, how are you guys?
Fine, what's up?
Okay, long story short, a couple months back, before I left for a trip out of the country, I got a weird tingling in my legs. While I was out of the country, that turned into a weird numbness. But it was also painful at the same time. And it ended up getting so bad that I had to go to the hospital because every time I walked, it felt like my legs were getting shocked, like they were on fire.
Wow.
They gave me shots and stuff of like anti-inflammatory medicine, and then the pain went away.
Yeah, what kind of shots did they give you?
Oh, no, the shot was for the pain.
Mm-hmm.
They gave me anti-inflammatory pills.
And the shot was for the pain. Okie doke.
Yeah, sorry. And then fast forward to now, it hasn't gotten to that point where it was so bad that I had to go to the hospital, but it's continued, and I went to my doctor here. They did an EMG
EMG, the little needles in you to see whether or not the nerves were firing. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, they did an EMG, and they didn't find anything in my EMG. They said it was perfectly fine, but the doctor said you probably have a moralgia paresthetic.
Mm-hmm. Moralgia paresthetica, which is sort of a nerve. Well, it's the nerves keep on firing, basically, is what.
Yeah, but he didn't really give me any information or anything. He didn't say anything about how to make it better, and I was kind of just like left, like, oh, okay, that's fantastic. What does that mean?
Thank you so much for that diagnosis, doctor. How do you spell moralgia paresthetica? So I can look it up. So what did you do? Did you look it up on the web?
I did look it up, and I did find some things, but I was just wondering because, like, it has been going on and off. It'll lessen to the point where I almost don't feel anything. I just feel a little sensitivity on my skin to the point where it's like I'm getting shocked constantly. Okay.
So where exactly is this? Tell me, describe the area.
It was originally both of my legs. It was a bigger part, like the whole outside of my left thigh and just a small portion of the outside of my right thigh. Mm-hmm. But that one went away completely and it hasn't come back.
Okay. So one of the things about moralgia paresthetica is that sometimes it's very difficult to treat. So there are some medicines that we sometimes use, and sometimes there are other treatments. So one medicine that's used is gabapentin. Have you ever been on gabapentin at all?
No.
Okay, so gabapentin is a drug that's really used for chronic neurological pain, and sometimes it works quite well for this in the short run for maybe 4 to 6 weeks. And what you do is you take 300, you have to get it from your doctor, 300 milligrams at bedtime, wait a couple of days. If that gets rid of the pain, if it doesn't, you take 300 milligrams at bedtime and in the morning, wait a few days, and if that, you take 300 milligrams 3 times a day. The drug makes you sleepy, so you have to sort of slowly ramp up to it. And you can take really up to 600 milligrams 3 times a day. And sometimes people do that. They're on it for maybe a month or two, and then they slowly taper off and the nerve pain goes away. Some people have to take it at bedtime for literally a period of months or years, but that keeps their pain under control after they're on the higher dose. So that's one treatment. Another treatment can be injections. There are injections that can be done into the nerve by either an invasive radiologist or an anesthesiologist that specializes in pain. And you get injections into that nerve or into the lumbar spine where the nerve comes from. And sometimes a series of one or two injections will also get the pain under control, and then it kind of disappears. We don't really know what. If you've read about it on the web, we don't really know what causes it. But I think what I would do is I would talk to your doctor about being on gabapentin. You've got a primary care doc who you've talked to about this, right?
Yes.
What I would do is I would call up your primary care doc and say, look, I spoke to this quack on the radio, and he said, gabapentin, I want some 300 milligram tablets. I'm going to start with one at bedtime and eventually ramp up to 3 times a day, and it might keep you from an office call. I would definitely do that because that can be very, very helpful. Opioids do not work for this. The other thing you can try before that is take naproxen, over-the-counter Aleve, generic, 2 tablets twice a day, give that a week or 10 days and see if that works. If that works, you're home, and I would stay on it for a month or two. If the Aleve does it as an anti-inflammatory, that's what I would do. There is, by the way, no definitive way to say you have moralgia paresthetica on an EMG. That doesn't give you the answer.
Yeah, that's what he told me, but then he also didn't tell me, like, oh, you should do this to see if it's this, you know?
Right. He didn't give you the full value that you needed. He just said, well, the test is inconclusive. Well, hopefully we've helped. Hopefully we've helped. Thanks.
You did. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Sure, appreciate that call. Thank you. Now, Zorba, time again to wade through the murky waters of medical quackery. Let's fire up another segment of Quacking Up with Dr. Zorba.
Quack it up.
Okay, Zorba, I may regret asking you this, but tell us about a device from the 1990s called the stimulator.
The stimulator. That's it. The stimulator. How wonderful is it? The stimulator. You know, do you have an electric bar? Do you have a propane gas grill barbecue?
No.
Do you barbecue? Obviously, you don't barbecue.
No,
do
I don't. No.
Yeah, because I assume you don't have one that's like charcoal, because that would be more work. Well, on a propane gas grill, you push a button. And it does a piezoelectric. It puts a little spark to start the grill.
Yeah.
And so somebody had the bright idea that maybe what we should do is take these little sparky devices, take it out and sell it so we can use it for headaches. So you do a little spark to your head, do a little spark to your back, do a spark to your joints for arthritis, spark to your tummy for menstrual cramps, spark to your ear for earaches. Am I getting you here? Yeah. Spark to your nose for nosebleeds. This kind of will cure everything. So it's just, so they were selling the stimulator left and right and making money until the Fed said no. The stimulator that you're selling and calling it a medical device, and it has not been tested. It is a scheme. So the FDA said, basically confiscated the devices and said, you can't do this anymore. And they said, you have to mail back all the checks to people, which I don't think the company did, because basically the stimulator doesn't really do anything. And it is a hoax. Huh. This little sparky piezoelectric thing that goes to your, we put anywhere on your skin, which, by the way, gives you a little shock. I mean, there's a little...
Those and this is in the 1990s this happened.
Hey, listen, quackery is not just an old-time...
I guess not.
It's not just an old-timey thing. We have quacks today left and right, and we're going to just uncover the quacks for our listeners so they can go through life knowing that they have a life that is quack-free.
Mm-hmm. Do you have an example of medical quackery to contribute to this segment? Just send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
Back to the phones now, Zorba at 800-462-7413. Now let's welcome a listener in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
Okay. I listen to you guys religiously, and I'm 74. I've never had allergies that I know of, but for several months now, my nose has been stuffy, and I become really miserable when I lay down in the evening in bed to watch TV and to try to go to sleep. One nostril will close up completely, and the other is restricted to the point where I feel like I will suffocate unless I mouth breathe.
Oh, wow.
Oxygen. Mm-hmm. You know, it's to the point where if somebody put pretty their awful hand over my mouth, I'd really mm-hmm panic. Mm-hmm. Since I've never had allergies, mm-hmm, I thought maybe the recently corrected basement mold problem mm-hmm could be the source. There was a lot of basement mold because of leaky water heaters. Mm-hmm. He finally fixed that, but it's still damp and kind of smelly down there.
Mm-hmm. And this has gone on, how long has it been bothering you?
Maybe 4 to 6 months at the most.
Okay. Okay, I've got a couple of suggestions. First of all, go to the store, get a couple of things. Go get some saline nasal spray. Get a generic and basically keep your nose moisturized. Got to do that throughout the day. That's what you want to do throughout the day for at least a month or so. It's not medicated, but I recommend you go and get a medication either from your doctor by a prescription. It might be cheaper because of your copay, but you can now get Flonase over the counter. I don't know if there's a generic, but it's a steroid nasal spray. It really works well.
There's a problem with this.
What?
I bought Flonase. I read the box.
Yeah.
And on the box and the paperwork and all that, very prominently mentioned a couple of times was not to use it if you have cataracts because it contributes to the development of cataracts, and I do have the beginning of cataracts, uh-huh, not to the point where it affects my vision, but I didn't even open the box of Flonase uh-huh after I read that.
Yeah. Well, that's even though it's mentioned on the box, I don't really know how much that is an effect. That may be, it may be less than 5% or 2% of the population. And it's also a function of whether or not it drips into your eyes, you know, because you have your nose and your eyes. And if it goes up into your nose and then goes up through the tear ducts, that might be an issue. But I actually was not aware of that.
It kind of scares you, though, when, you know, cataracts are pretty serious when they develop.
Yeah, I don't usually look at Flonase and tell people not to take it for their cataracts. I'm not going to recommend that you take it, though. I think if you have a fear of that, then you should use the saline sprays. I don't think the Flonase for a week or two is actually going to cause you trouble with the cataracts.
Okay.
I think if you take the Flonase for 6 to 12 months, that may be an issue. But I don't think that's the case. I'll have to do some research, by the way, on Flonase and cataracts, which I'll put on a on a future show. But getting back to the issue, sometimes a week or two of Flonase is just going to open up your nose, and then the nasal spray with the saline spray you use to keep your nose moisturized, and that may work for you. So I'd still recommend that you use that, two squirts in the morning, two squirts in the evening. Give it for a week or two. I don't think that's going to do you any harm and may allow you to breathe well so you can feel better and sleep better.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And before we head out, Zorba, let's open the Zorba Pastor on Your Health mailbag for a listener question. This one comes from a listener who wants to remain anonymous. Hi, good doctor and Tom. I do not doubt the healthy claims you profess for coffee, but here's my question. Is it the caffeine in the coffee that is the vital ingredient? If so, can we get similar positive effects from tea? I've noticed that I have less gas with tea, and as I age, that social problem seems to increase.
I wonder if it's a woman or a man, because women worry more about gas than guys. I mean, you know, I'm making a generalization there, but on the whole, guys, you know, they pass gas, and especially if they're around other guys, they don't say much. But women, we got to be careful. I can just imagine the calls and the emails we're going to get on this. Anyway, no, it's the coffee, because some of the issues that we talked about recently worked even with decaf. So the answer is tea is good for you. Green tea is good for you. Coffee is also good for you. They're just different products. And it's not the caffeine. It's the coffee.
Have a question for Zorba? Just post it to our Facebook page or send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at zorbapastor.org or, of course, through Facebook.
And, of course, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen. Our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, asking you to join us on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0902Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic, and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at zorbapastor.org.